The boundaries have been broken.
Welcome to Vanguard Radio.
The Aryan Alternative. News and views for whites you won't find anywhere else. The Aryan Alternative is a print publication of uncensored news for whites. Be the first in your neighborhood to distribute news without the Jews by ordering 100 copies for $12 through the Vanguard News Network. Visit govnn.com for ordering information. The Aryan Alternative and the Vanguard News Network. No Jews, just right.
The problem is for the next generation. That's when the hurt's going to come about.
Let's get that ring on the ass! Come on! Let's go!
They're taking over, and you're a racist pig if you resist.
Go back to Europe!
That's the law. It's a war. I'm a painter. In the last 2 years, I started buying guns.
You don't make anything better by adding 30 million Mexicans to it, do you?
I'm not going to sit by on my couch and get fat while my country disappears.
Ladies and gentlemen, are you ready to hear from the founder of the Madman Project?
I'm gonna show you an armed vigilante right here.
These are our weapons.
The reforms in immigration that have completely altered this country have been the result, really, of elite sentiment and frankly, ethnic interest group lobbying and so on.
The Democratic Party sees massive immigration, both legal and illegal, as a source of voters. On the other side, the Republican Party sees massive immigration, both legal and illegal, as a source of cheap labor.
There is absolutely no immigration law enforcement, which means we have no borders, which means we have no nation.
If we don't choose this border again as the line in the sand to our own government about what we the people demand and what we expect from the government, you might as well just check it in and make sure there's something good on TV every night and stay out of their way. Don't do anything wrong, because you won't stand a chance.
The United States government has refused to effectively protect the southern border with Mexico for 40 years. Average American citizens are now banding together to stand up against the government they feel no longer represents their interests. October Sun Films presents The Line in the Sand, a documentary by Byron Jost. Visit OctoberSunFilms.com for more information.
Well, Mr. Carpetbagger, we got something in this territory. Called the Missouri Boat Ride.
After the opening monologue, I welcome you to join the show by calling 609-910-1418. The Skype username to call is SSKIIT. Well, welcome to the broadcast. I'm very happy to be with you folks tonight at VNN. I'm always impressed by the people I meet. Well, let's jump right in. Tonight, I'd like to talk about the Germans and their role in our history. And I think it necessary to mention that although my surname is German, I'm not a full-blooded German, but I am proud to be a full-blooded Aryan. But I'm just as much Scots-Irish, if not even more than I am German. Though my worldview is as a Pan-Aryan,
and is based in the European experience in America. And in that regard, I'm not much of a chauvinist among the European nationalities. I'll also be discussing Christianity tonight, and in that regards, I'll let the listener decide what exactly I think about that subject. The 20th century, as we know, was a particularly dreadful time for our race, and what emerged after World War II and World War I was unlike what preceded it. What happened to our nations was nothing short of apocalyptic. Many cities in continental Europe lay in rubble, and entombed in that rubble were millions of our kin. Even those nations not bombed would soon undergo a cultural revolution as destructive as anything unleashed by a bombing run. Those slaughtered, the Americans, the English, the French, the Russians, the Poles, the Italians, the Czechs, and the Germans, were often among the fittest of our breed. And please keep in mind, when I list all these nationalities, I really am talking about our blood, our flesh and blood, often the best flesh and blood. War is dysgenic. It often sacrifices the bravest and most fearless and courageous of our kind, and it certainly has been a blow to our race to have them eliminated. Official history tells us the Germans caused both wars and lost them both. There is some question about that statement, though. Anyway, the real loser was our race. Among the parties involved in these fratricidal conflicts, I wish to talk about the Germans in particular tonight. The Germans are, or were, no ordinary people. They are among our race's finest specimens. Even today, the average IQ in Germany is 102, among the highest in Europe. In contrast, the United States' average IQ is 98, and I suspect that number is dropping quickly. The German tribes that emerged from the Hyperborean regions of antiquity met and held the Romans at the Rhine. In 89, the Romans sent three legions deep into German lands. They met in the Teutoburg Forest. The Romans were led by Varus, and the Germans were led by Hermannius. The Germans slaughtered the Romans to a man. The Battle of Teutoburg Forest is an interesting tale. The life of Hermannius is also quite interesting. Turns out he lived in Rome for a number of years and was educated there. But the point is, the Germans were, even before encountering the Romans, an intelligent race, capable of defeating the Romans on the battlefield. Even the Greeks, with their formidable hoplites, and the Egyptians with their navy, fell before the Romans. Not so the Germans. Julius Evola saw the Germans not so much as warriors, but as bearers of a new culture, one that would reinvigorate the dying Roman Empire. The light of the North is what he called it. That's the term he gave to Germany. Evola and others argued it was the Germans that remade Christianity, making it meaningful to the Aryan culture of Europe. As the Roman Empire in the West decayed, the Germans filled the empire, staffing its armies and rising to rule. They brought to the old empire a renewed sense of duty, honor, and youth. Importantly, they remade Judaic Christianity, which had spread like cancer in the decaying empire. I'll speak more about Evola's views later in the broadcast. Anyway, the destruction of Germany in 1945 weighs most heavily upon us, for they, as William Pierce said, were among the brightest of our people. In 2003, the sociologist Charles Murray, a co-author of The Bell Curve, published Human Accomplishment. This book surveyed recorded history from 800 BC to 1950 AD. In fact, it surveyed all recorded history, not just European. The purpose for writing Human Accomplishment was to identify those precious few individuals responsible for creating the greatest works of art, literature, and significant scientific discoveries. You may recall that Mr. Murray was the co-author of The Bell Curve, a book, like Human Accomplishment, which was subject to great criticism from the priests of political correctness. And for this reason alone, it deserves to be read. Murray used a rigorous and consistent methodology to confirm what William Pierce declared, that it is true, the Germans are indeed the very best, among the very best, of our kind. One section of the book, if you happen to go to the library, you'll find this section very interesting. It starts on page 301, and it's a series of maps, and the maps of Europe are quite interesting. Onto the various maps, but the European one is the one we're talking about, are affixed blue dots. Each blue dot represents an individual responsible for significant accomplishment, or in some cases, accomplishments in the arts and sciences. If you're looking at this map next time you go to the library or the bookstore, I think Barnes & Noble still has it in their shelves, you'll note that Germany is filled with blue dots, as is northern Italy and southern England. There are clusters of blue dots scattered around Russia and other places, Spain, but the main concentration of blue is in Germany and southern England and northern Italy. Some will recognize this area of Europe, which is filled with blue dots, with the exception of England, as the borders of the Holy Roman Empire, which existed from 843 AD to 1806. For purposes later in the broadcast, I now wish to note that the boundaries of this empire, the Holy Roman Empire, extend beyond the Rhine into the German heartland, that chunk of Middle Europe, which the Romans never conquered, a place in Europe which the Roman sword, as some say, never cut. Understanding the Holy Roman Empire requires a knowledge of geography and history few Europeans, much less Americans, possess. But I think it's important to say that the empire was an incubator of European culture and nobility. It was founded by Charlemagne and was the empire of the German princes. The emperor of the empire was almost always a German. This was the home of the Habsburgs, the Saxons, and the Hohenstaufen houses. I list these names of the German aristocratic families to demonstrate that their pedigree is quite old, and the Germans a very noble race. Tacitus, the Roman historian of the 1st and 2nd century, perhaps the first chronicler of the Germans, regarded the German tribes and their rulers as, quote, free from all taint of intermarriage with foreign nations, and that they appear as a distinct, unmixed race, like none but themselves. Tacitus wrote a book about the Germans, and he further comments about their leadership. Quote, they chose their kings by birth, their generals for merit. These kings have not unlimited authority or arbitrary power, and the generals do more by example than by authority. If they are energetic, if they are conspicuous, if they fight in the front, they lead, then they are admired. But to reprimand, to imprison, even to flog, is not permitted to the priests alone, and that not as punishment or at the general's bidding, but as it were by the mandate of God, who they believe to inspire their warriors. Tacitus' description of the Germans is not one of a group needing Roman civilization, or any civilization, much less Christian civilization. They seem to be quite a noble breed, and this from a 1st and 2nd century Roman historian. It has been asserted by some that Christianized Romans brought civilization to the Germans via the Roman sword. Well, as we have seen, the Romans made little progress in military action against the Germans. Anyway, the story goes that the Roman sword and the Christian message somehow civilized the barbarian German tribes. I disagree with this theory. The Roman Empire is not to be confused with the Roman Republic. The Republic was comprised of various Italian tribes like the Volsci, the Romans obviously, and the Aequi. The Republic was a tribal thing. It was not Christian, and it had no explicit ideology of universalism, though it was flexible, and it offered the conquered some autonomy. Remember that it was the Roman Republic that produced political thinkers and philosophers like Cicero and Cato, while the Empire produced lechers and the dissolute like Nero and Caligula. It was the Republic that developed a complex political system with divided government, while it was the Empire that was a centralized autocratic institution ruling in the manner of Oriental despotism. The Empire, which was consolidated by Augustus in the first century, metastasized into a polyglot multicultural cesspit, much like America today. And, of course, it had pretensions of world rule. Perhaps we can make an analogy to the old American Republic, which we used to know here, and the empire we now live under, where the American Republic created statesmen like Jefferson Davis and John C. Calhoun. In contrast, the American empires produced men like George Bush and Bill Clinton, where the American Republic produced poets like Edgar Allan Poe. The American Empire offers Maya Angelou instead. Anyway, this all has to do with the Germans. The Romans, both the Empire and the Republic, conquered much of Western Europe, but also went on to conquer Asia Minor, Egypt, North Africa, and for a time Mesopotamia. These, quote, conquered, unquote, alien cultures returned the favor. They exported back to Rome their Oriental religions. Cosmopolitan dissolution overtook Rome and destroyed the heritage and customs of the Italian tribes. Christianity was only one of the many cults to come back to Rome. After the rise of the empire and the decline of the republic, both the quality and quantity of the literature and art declined, and, in course, the politics became centralized and despotic. The discipline of the Roman army also declined, and as was demonstrated in the crushing defeats at Adrianople in 378 AD and Chalons in 451. Also, with these defeats came the loss of their ancient customs were neglected, the ancient Italian beliefs in Zeus and Apollo and the various household gods. Soon, bizarre cults replaced them. One of them was a Judaic sect called Christianity. But how could Judaic system take root in Europe? Now we return to Evola. When we look at European history, we don't see the ethics of Judaism. Instead, we see the culture of chivalry, honor, fealty, sacrifice, and not a culture of petty money grubbing and narrow ethnocentrism typifying Judaism. This chivalric spirit came from the northern Aryan culture that lay for centuries just north of Rome, just beyond its reach. I want to read now a little bit from Evola's book, Revolt Against the Modern World, and picking up this theme of the Germans now entering into this decaying culture that is being riddled with decadence, overindulgence, a very tired and weak institution. And then we see the Germans starting to come in and fill its armies and replenish its population to some degree. In chivalry, we can distinctly see the extent to which the fundamental themes of early Christianity had been overcome, and how the church herself was forced to sanction, or at least tolerate, a complex of principles, values, and customs that can hardly be reconciled with the spirit of Christianity's origins. Within a nominally Christian world, chivalry upheld without any substantial alterations an Arian ethic in the following things. 1. Upholding the ideal of the hero rather than the saint, and of the conqueror rather than the martyr. 2. Regarding faithfulness and honor rather than charity and humbleness as the highest virtues. Regarding cowardice and dishonor rather than sin as the worst possible evil. 4. Ignoring or putting into practice the evangelical precepts not of opposing evil and not retaliating against offenses, but rather methodically punishing unfairness and evil. 6. Refusing to love one's enemy, and instead of fighting him and being magnanimous only after defeating him. This was the culture that Germany brought to the old empire. This was the culture that became the Holy Roman Empire. And you know, when we strip away the layers of Aryan custom, art, and inspiration that the Germans, and other tribes layered onto Christianity, nothing but a provincial Levantine cult remains. When you think of Christian civilization, think of the Grail story, Tristan and Isolde, the Song of Roland, Albrecht Dürer, Holbein, Bach, Handel, stained glass windows, feudal law, Gothic churches. This is Christianity. This is what our ancestors fought for, not some indecipherable Jewish scribbling. When we strip out the Aryan covering on Christianity, all that is left is a sterile nub of Christian Zionism or Judeo-Christianity. Reduced Christianity is a lifeless, harsh, unimaginative, unheroic, uncreative, narrow, and inflexible religion. It is not a vessel of culture, but the acid of anti-culture. And let's look at the accomplishments of Christianity in the last 60 years, especially after Germany was destroyed, after World War II. Have we witnessed the construction of any magnificent churches? Most churches today look like strip malls or Walmarts. What about other art? A few years ago, I visited the local Protestant churches, of which my heritage comes from, and you know what I heard? I heard not the music of Handel, Bach, or Beethoven, but the beat of drums. It was the rhythms of Africa. The churches have disposed of the Aryan for the African. Okay. So what about politics, the Christian influence in politics? Christians, in too many circumstances, have become merely the lapdogs for the state of Israel. Oh, sure, they fight a rearguard battle against homosexuality while, ironically, voting for a party whose leadership is packed with queers. Most churches, whether Catholic or Protestant, are enthusiastic promoters of third world immigration. The Christian betrayal of whites has been going on for some time now. Many of Rhodesia's Christians weakened the resolve of whites in that nation, now called Zimbabwe. The Christian churches of South Africa also fell in line with the liberal order and passively allowed the black takeover of South Africa. And now the American churches are working to weaken America by encouraging miscegenation and mass immigration. I think somewhere under the rubble of bombed-out Germany is or was the answer to our crisis in Christianity. Germany, I suspect, had a seed of regeneration, perhaps a revivified form of Christianity, perhaps something new. I guess we'll never know what that really was. Okay, that's the opening comments for tonight. I welcome your calls. Let me see if I remember the number. The Skype username is SSKIIT. And Hal, Stan, could you send me the phone number? Yeah, it's 609-910-1418. That's 609-910-1418. But I really recommend using Skype, getting it on your computer, and getting part of the scene here on VNN. Okay, I guess we can head for a break now, Stan, and we'll come back and take any calls if there are any. I got a few other things to talk about. We'll be right back. Thank you very much.
Listening to Vanguard Radio.
Live web chat.
24/7.
IRC or Java.
Pick your poison.
Right racialist. Intercourse. Live and online. VNN Live.
That's right, live chat for VNN. VNN.mine.nu. 1488/join/VNN. For you Java folks, http://vnn.mine.nu/88/VNN live. And ties need not apply.
Come get some.
The Aryan Alternative. News and views for whites you won't find anywhere else. The Aryan Alternative is a print publication of uncensored news for whites. Be the first in your neighborhood to distribute news without the Jews by ordering 100 copies for $12 through the Vanguard News Network. Visit govnn.com for ordering information. The Aryan Alternative and the Vanguard News Network. No Jews, just right.
You hear that, Mr. Anderson? That is the sound of inevitability.
And I think we have a caller, but one thing I'd like to talk about tonight is these miners that died last week. I was kind of impressed with how, I think there was one survivor, but I was kind of impressed with the stories of how they met their deaths. They did it. I wish they could have all survived and gone back to their families. But from what I hear, they really met their deaths as men, and they went out as men. And they didn't whine and kvetch and say their, you know, blame the world or blame other people. They faced their deaths heroically, from what I can see. And we'll talk about that later if we have time. But I don't know, Stan. Do we have a caller tonight? Hello, caller.
Hello.
Yes.
Hi, I'm Frank.
You're Frank?
Yeah, from Cleveland. Thought I'd call in.
Okay. I'm glad you're here.
I enjoy your show. It's good stuff.
Well, thank you. There's been a lot of ups and downs here about Christianity in the, on the forum and elsewhere.
So I hear. Are we on the air right now?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard your bit about the Arian accretions onto Christianity, which make it appear palatable to our people. And I agree 100% because the more you read the Bible, the more disgusted you get.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking right here at a book I highly recommend for everybody called Deceived, Damned, and Defiant by David Lane.
Mm-hmm.
And if anyone's interested, you could just Google search that title, and it's available through a number of sources. He has a very interesting section here where he compares the New Testament Ten Commandments to his Wotansvolk, Wisdom for Aryan Man. And I'll just give you one quick example here.
Please do.
I don't want to ramble on endlessly, but Luke 6:27 says, love your enemies, do good to them which hate you. And the Wotansvolk counterpart to that would be, smite your enemies and the enemies of your people with the hammer of Thor. Feed their bodies to the vultures in the marketplace, that your next enemy depart in fear. And Matthew 6:34, take therefore no thought for the morrow. Now there's good advice for your kids, right? Don't give tomorrow a second thought. And the Wotansvolk counterpart would be, a prudent man does his best to ensure a secure future for his children and his race. So I thought I'd make a contrast here between what the New Testament states and what a real Arian religion would state.
Frank, we as a people are running out of time.
Oh, yeah.
And we have got to toughen up. And, you know, if Christianity wants to help us, you know, if it wants to defend the civilization that carries its name, you know, I can deal with that. But I don't see it happening.
Well, the problem is, you know, if we David Lane makes a good point in this book, and I'm not a PR guy for David Lane, it's just such a mind-blowing book. He states that, well, as far as the identity Christians go, if they just followed the Old Testament, which is all about taking territory, power, and women, and, you know, achieving success in this world, well, we would be okay. But when you lop on that New Testament, which was written for Jews or non-Jews, I mean, that is the way it turned out, it's just a suicide manual. I mean, my God, don't get married, don't have kids, don't think about tomorrow, don't resist evil. Is it any more plain? I mean, we got to pull away this insane security blanket already.
Yeah, yeah, we really do. And the point I was making is that, you know, something, and I attribute it to the Germanic element in our civilization, that, you know, that made Christianity palatable for us, and that this German element, although certainly other European tribes were part of it, made it work. But with the destruction of our civilization in World War II, that element's gone. And
that's a very perceptive point.
To continue on with this reduced sort of pathetic, cowardly religion that is actually working for our destruction. As far as I can tell, there are no prominent churches that are not involved in this importation of brown people into our country, and they're doing it, and they're working for the government. They're partners with this awful Washington tyranny in doing this. And as far as I can see, the Christian churches today are stooges for Israel.
We can't go halfway. You know, when you have a weed in your garden, you got to take it out by the root.
Mm-hmm.
You can't sit here and talk about saving the race and all this stuff and sit there with a suicide manual in your hands that you're giving to your kids. I mean, if we can't go all the way, it's better not to do anything. Because frankly, I'm getting tired of how many times in history this has repeated itself, where country after country expels the Jews, you know, gives them provisions, puts them on nice clean boats, and then, you know, these people just return to wreak an even more devastating vengeance upon their previous hosts. I mean, enough is enough already. And this Christianity is the number one problem. A lot of intelligent people have figured it out. Ben Clausen, the creator of the electric can opener, self-made millionaire. Tom Metzger used to be an identity preacher. David Lane was a Christian. I mean, the ones who stay in it a long time seem to come all the way around and out of that Jewish cocoon. And the half measures are dangerous. I just want to state one last thing I recommend people check out. There's an essay available at heathenfolk.net, and it's really good. It's written by a Jew. It's called A Real Case Against the Jews. And it's this guy, I believe his name was Benjamin Friedman, if I recall correctly, but it's definitely called A Real Case Against the Jews, where he's poking fun at anti-Semitism, and he's basically in this article saying, if you people had any idea what we've really done to you, I mean, uprooted your natural religions, you know, raised your kids on Jewish nationalism, completely destroyed your history, and he's just basically laughing at this sort of superficial anti-Semitism that he was familiar with when he wrote the article.
I have family that live in the Ozarks, and I went and visited them at one of these very, very fundamentalist churches. It had the Assembly is in their name. I'm not going to mention any particular church because I don't want to smear them particularly too much, but the Assembly of something. And I was invited to this church, and I was very curious, and lo and behold, they had a Jewish rabbi come, and he sat in the first row, and you know, the pastor got up and said, now Jews have very strict rules about non-Jews touching them. So this is right in the middle of the congregation. All the Christians are there, and then this rabbi is in there with his hat. He looked a lot like Jack Abramoff, this gangster that got arrested. And the pastor's, you know, treating him like he's Christ, and then saying, now, don't everyone get all excited during the break here. Don't go touch him, because they don't like to be touched. They don't like to come into, you know, Christian churches. But, you know, he's going to talk to us about, you know, Judaism, and we're very happy to have him here. And, you know, I'm thinking, this is John Ashcroft's church, if you remember that fellow.
Wow.
The attorney general.
That fucking psychopath? Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, yeah, he's the Patriot Act man. And
great.
That's his church. He's from Missouri.
Yeah.
And
maybe if he has a daughter, he can give the daughter to the rabbi, because they have a really thriving white slave trade over in Israel. The rabbi can, you know, meet his daughter, talk to her about Judaism, take her back to Israel, rape her. Make her work in a brothel, and you know, maybe he'll let John visit her once in a while. What can you say? I mean, this is fucking ridiculous. Look, I'm not going to make any apologies. This Christianity is insane. Anybody out there who thinks you're force-saving the white race, if you can't divest yourself of that apparently insane security blanket you have, don't even bother, because it's going to get really ugly in the near future. I think that's pretty clear too. So I don't want to ramble on, but hey, great show. I'm going to go and listen.
Thank you very much.
Hey, you take care.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, folks. You know, there's a lot, you know, in my view, you know, Frank has his views and I share some of them. And, but there's a lot that we can really appreciate about Christianity. Like those things that I mentioned, those artists and the churches, and, you know, we don't have to disrespect them, these artifacts that we have. We don't have to disrespect our history, but at the same time, you know, I think we have to grudgingly, in some cases, admit some of what Frank says is right, and the sort of pathology that's running in Christianity today, by those who are promoters of it. I think they need to defend. I think they need to, if they you know, want to be faithful. At the same time, they don't want to see the eradication of their race. I think they've got to they have to go to their leaders and, you know, say, hey, enough of this this nonsense that you're doing with this immigration and being a lapdog for Israel and, you know, supporting a party like the Republican Party that is staffed full of queers and deviants of all kinds. I'm thinking of Israel Hernandez, for instance, who's a staffer in the White House. There are many others that have come out. I don't think there's really any Christians like that listening tonight, to be honest with you, but there may be. And if you are, you know, how can you be part of this system that's doing this, that is nothing but a yes man for Bush. And then he does all this sort of stuff, and he puts menorahs on the White House lawn, and he calls Christmas happy holidays and all this kind of stuff. I really do want to honor my Christian heritage in some ways, but it's currently, I think, in a very dishonorable state. Okay. Well, until we get another caller, I'd like to talk about these miners that died, and we're hearing the notes that these men have written. At least one of them kept a sort of hour by hour journal. He wanted to assure his family that, you know, he wasn't dying in pain and these type of things. This again doesn't seem to be whining or crying or begging. I'm sure they were scared. I'm sure they were frightened. But I think that they stiffened up and they faced what was going to happen, and they did it like men, like men of our kind do. And I think that's quite a noble thing to consider. I think I was talking to my wife, and I absolutely, and we both of us, as far as children goes, we will never, ever allow them to get involved with these wars this government is engaged in. And I don't care if we have to go to jail, we're not going to do it. But if things change and we start fighting the real enemy in our country, the liberation of our country begins not in Iraq, it begins here. And if we start fighting the real enemy, this is something that I would certainly not be afraid of dying for. This is something that, you know, I would stand beside my relatives, my family, and fight. If I knew that my people were behind me and everyone was giving their all, you know, we want to get the Mexicans out, we want to get the Jews out, I'll fight for that. I'll give my life for that. And I'll trust that, you know, someone's going to pick up my rifle and shoot back. I don't want to be a coward in that respect. But I'm not going to be a fool either. And I'm not going to go over to Iraq and fight for whatever, who knows what reason. You know, we have to think really hard. I think there's the quote that Alex Linder brings up often about Solzhenitsyn, saying that, you know, you're not going to win. Your ideas are not going to prevail unless you're willing to die for them. And, you know, I think we can face this fact in a manly way. No one wants to die. But that's the sort of resolve we have to look at this, because, you know, these Jews, they're not going to give up their media. They're not going to respond to letters. They're not going to respond to criticism. The political institutions of this country are unable to deal with the problem. And if we want to get rid of them, it's not going to be nice. Okay. All right. It'd be nice to have a caller come in. Okay. So what else is in the news tonight? I'm surprised that my comments didn't generate more of a fuss. There are some people who are very up in arms about that. I have a map of that I'm going to. I'm going to post this the script that I read from at the beginning of the broadcast. And I think a lot of people that are listening tonight probably come out of this Holy Roman Empire. The borders of the empire went from Spain all the way almost into Russia. Oh, here, let me give the numbers for the call. Stan, thanks for reminding me. The Skype username is SSKIIT, and the phone number is, if I can find it, here it is, 609-910-1418. That's 609-910-1418. And the email address, which we have an email address for this show, it's TTIND, that's The Truth Is No Defense, at goyfire.com. That's TTIND at goyfire.com. Okay, is there a caller? That's just in time. Okay, I guess you can give us a name so we can refer you.
Kundalini Joe.
Kundalini?
Okay. Yeah, that's my name I use on VNN, so why not use it here? Is that all?
Oh, okay. Okay, that's reminds me of the Evola's term of Kali Yuga, if you're familiar.
Yeah,
with...
well, I've read a little bit about that in the cycle of destruction through Savitri Devi.
Oh, and, you know, I haven't read any of her work.
She's pretty good. I don't think she's the final word. I think in some ways she's up in the air with her look at an original time of peace and ideal period that we all must look back to. That's a little tough for me to buy into, as if some kind of racial Garden of Eden existed. However, you know, she's a broad thinker. She's she led a interesting enough life, and she walked the walk. So you know, I get a lot from her.
Yeah. Do you have anything special for us tonight?
Well, I just walked in the door, and so I'm not at one with the context of your show tonight, but I just want to show some support. But what I'm really kind of concerned with is that, you know, when I go to yoga classes and stuff like that, and especially when I hang out with people have no historical context.
Yes.
And this, you know, when I read E. Michael Jones, and I'm not like real well versed in him, he points a way to fight within the context of Christianity, and this seems like an antidote to the ahistorical thinking that the New World Order that
Judeo-Christianity I'm sorry, sir. Go ahead.
This ahistorical thinking of love without a historical context, without the battles that preceded it. Battles perhaps against usury, battles against Muslims. These battles took place, as far as I know, within the context of the Roman Catholic Church. And so to completely dump on the church for white nationalists is almost, and I'm not saying, but, you know, this is what I'm proposing to you as a question for discussion.
Yes.
Is that almost like the ahistorical thinking that we get from these girls who go to yoga class and walk away from their own histories?
My point
is... Am I making any sense?
Yes. my point tonight, you may have heard Frank, and I don't quite, I'm not quite in alignment with Frank. I'm quite sympathetic to his positions, but
yeah. No, I didn't hear him. I just walked in the door. I'm calling to show support.
Okay. What I spoke to tonight is how the Germans remade Christianity, and how they gave it meaning. They transformed it from this sort of bizarre messianic cult, and they made it something intelligible for European people. And of course, there were other tribes involved in this, but it's mainly this Germanic spirit. And I read some quotes from Evola. And then at the end, I kind of summarized the, you know, the terrible state, I believe, of Christianity in the last 60
terrible.
Years. And, you know, I said that, yeah. And Frank is, a reader of David Lane, and he's very much involved in, and, or very much knowledgeable of, sort of a pre-Christian ideas of Germany and the Baltic regions up there. And he was quite harsh in his criticism of Christianity, and I'm not going to castigate him for that. That was
you know,
the main
I believe
thing.
I believe the deference that is inherent in Christianity, and I believe the deferred gratification that is almost like deference, that's part of Christianity is great. But it seems to me that Christianity, as it stands now, is terribly lost. And what's even more to add to that, of course, Bush is playing the Christians along with these promises of legalizing abortion and fighting for the Ten Commandments on or whatever. But mostly he's just stringing them along with this legalized abortion stuff and so forth.
Yeah.
Well, anyway.
Okay. Well,
Yeah. I just thought I'd call and show support, and maybe I've I appreciate you bringing this subject up, and I'm going to listen to it later on the
archives.
On the archives, yes, sir.
Thank you very much for calling.
Okay, great job, Jeff.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
How are we doing for another caller, Stan? Anyway, let's see, where were we before? We were talking about this Abramoff fellow. And did you notice how he dressed? I think I was listening to Peter Schenck, and the light clicked. This guy was dressed up like a Jew. Matter of fact, he is a Jew, and he's an Orthodox Hasid, and it didn't really click until I thought of that that rabbi that came in for that that evangelical church and how he dressed in that sort of hat and that dark clothing, that brim type hat. I'm not sure what that's called, and you know it clicked. And Schenck was saying that, you know, this is a code. When that picture was taken around the world to the other Jews, that, you know, here I am, get me out of this mess. And, you know, I think there's something to that. I need to understand Christianity a bit. Judaism a bit. You know, I think there's a certain sort of, the tribe, you know, how they sort of communicate amongst themselves with little subtle messages to each other. When I was reading The Culture of Critique, it was quite interesting, this segment on Freud. And boy, if you talk about someone with a real hatred of Catholicism, and you know, my criticisms of Christianity are not one of hatred, are one of you know, what are you going to do to help us? And you're not helping us. That's where my criticism comes from. But this guy really hated, particularly Catholicism. And he would write little letters to people who, you know, kind of hinting, oh, are you a Jew too? And, you know, so we can talk freely, you know, this sort of thing, you know, without, you know, without any sort of pretense. In other words, oh, you're a Jew too, so we can sort of cut the act. We're among brothers now. And Freud is full of this sort of thing, and he reacted. Kundalini was talking about some of the more positive aspects of Christianity, and you know, one of the things I think in some degree is attributable to Christianity is a sort of emphasis on modesty in some respects. And Freud just hated that, and he worked hard to disinhibit Aryan people, white people, Europeans, and to love their vices and to revel in debauchery and these type of things. He did a great disservice to our kind, and of course his ideas are promoted, not so much today, but through the 70s and so forth. He was very, very popular. Okay, well, we're coming to the end of the hour. Would have liked to have got some other callers in tonight. My program engineer tells me that some attempted to get in through Skype, but some sort of problem tonight getting them in. I'm not sure. But we do appreciate the call tonight from Kundalini and Frank. And we'll be back next weekend. Maybe I'll do a midweek show to talk about various things. We'll see. All right. Good night, folks. Thanks for being here.